Welcome to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. I am your host, Henrik Johansson. I am the CEO and one of the founders of Gemba. Gemba helps entrepreneurs and companies to turn their great ideas into awesome new consumer products. Please stay to the end of the podcast and you'll learn how you can be our next guest on Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. Let's do it. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. This is the podcast where we interview successful entrepreneurs about their journey, how they got there, how did they get started, what are the obstacles they overcame on the way. And today we're super excited to have Jim Schiffman and Melissa Rappaport-Schiffman with us. They are the founder of Project Hive Pet Company. And we're going to learn about their journey and how they work. They're actually a couple. So super excited to learn more about how that works out. So without further ado, welcome to the podcast, Melissa and Jim. We're excited to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Henrik.
Awesome. So before we jump into the business, how you started it, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself? Where do you live? I think you're married. What do you like to do when you're not working? Because I assume you work a lot. Who wants to start?
Sure. Yeah, we live in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And my background is I have my MBA and my master's in public policy, and I worked in finance for a while. I worked in business development, and then I kind of changed over into sustainability. I'm a LEED accredited professional and spent many years helping business owners and property owners become more sustainable through the LEED certification process. So saving resources and saving money at the same time. I'm also a writer. I wrote a book called Building a Sustainable Home, Practical Green Design Choices for Your Health, Wealth, and Soul. And I've written a lot about just sustainability in businesses.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I'm Jim Schiffman. I'm also in Minnesota. We are married. I have a background in retail product buying, selling, manufacturing over the last 35 years. And how this kind of came to be, or how we've been involved with retail, is I've been, as I said, a manufacturer rep helping hundreds of companies take their brands as a third party broker and sell into the retail landscape, both, I guess I'll call it omni-channel, but it's mainly brick and mortar was where it started. And obviously when the internet happened, there was a lot of commerce happening online. So I've been fortunate to work with amazing companies over the years, CEOs, founders, both in the conventional sourcing products from overseas, as well as domestic products in and around the sustainable world. So in the mid-2000s, before sustainability and green was cool, actually I owe it to Melissa that kind of challenged me to bring some products into a big box retail environment that only were in co-ops and specialty retail grocery. And that was kind of my first entree into figuring out that, you know, building a business around sustainability, building a business around allowing brands access to the masses allows companies and better products for the planet to scale. So that's kind of a little bit of a peek inside of some of the how we started actually Project Hive.
That's awesome. Let's go in more on that. So you both obviously have successful careers, but I think this is the first product company you have started, both of you. Can you talk a little bit about how did you get there? Was it sort of the thought of, hey, we want to start something together? Is that where it started and then you found a project? Or was it that the project came to you first and then you decided to start from there?
It depends on who answers that question.
I love it.
So I'll jump in. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
Oh,
you weren't asking me, right?
As I mentioned, I've been fortunate to sit side by side with really a super innovative entrepreneurial founders, as well as talented CEOs of mostly small companies when we started, because they didn't need us when, you know, to get distribution. But one of the things, aside from Melissa challenging me to bring some better for the planet products into mass market distribution. And when I talk about mass market, I mean it is broadly mass market, but we live in Minneapolis. Target headquarters are based in Minneapolis, and that's, I would say, that would be the core retailer I'm talking about most in most cases. But when I've been in these retail manufacturing companies back in 1998, I helped Target kind of reinvent the whole pet category. And so I knew a lot of manufacturers, a lot of partners, a lot of people in the pet industry from way back in 1998. Had the opportunity to represent many of those brands, and actually still do today, into mass market distribution. But the category for the last 20 something some odd years, 27 years, has been just continuing to grow, and thought it was a really great category. On the human side of the products, I work with other brands like Seventh Generation, Clean Canteen, Nature's Path, in the sustainable, better for the planet, better for people categories. And saw that there was kind of this intersection that we were sitting in, that I was sitting in, that understood retail, understood the pet category, and then had the opportunity to sit side by side with these really interesting and capable founders. So I kind of took that as kind of the foundation of it. I've always kind of been interested in working with Melissa. She's really smart and experienced, and we have very complementary skill sets, from just kind of who we are and how we think about things. I'll let her talk more about that, but I think that's kind of how the concept started. And then I coerced her and twisted her arm to join me.
So you saw the category first as a here's an opportunity, other people having success here. And then you also saw, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have this relationship into retail that's probably pretty rare. But knowing that if you created something, you could probably get it distributed. All right.
Yeah, I would
That's
say
great.
for sure it's was Jim's kind of knowledge of the pet industry and of retail, seeing the opportunity for an authentic mission-driven pet company. Sort of there was white space in that area. We've seen a lot of change in the personal care business and cleaning business, but not as much innovation in the pet industry to be either better for you, better for the planet. And so we founded it with a mission, with a give back to help save bees, which is core to our values. Bees pollinate a third of our food, provide essential agricultural services, ecosystems, and part of the reason of the decline in bees is because of destruction of habitat. And so we help save bees by planting wildflower habitat, and that all over North America. So that, our home, we have a small lawn, but we have a lot of wildflowers, and we've personally witnessed and benefited from bee pollination. We grow raspberries and basil, other vegetables that are pollinated by bees. So I would say, it was kind of a combination of what we've been living in terms of wanting to be more sustainable ourselves, and also seeing an opportunity in the marketplace for that in the pet industry. So we just kind of combined that. So it was Jim's idea to get into that business. And then once we had an order from a retailer, we had to build the business. And so that meant, writing the business plan and raising capital. And so that's where I came in because of my background and experience. I was able to plug in there.
Wonderful. So today you have several different products. What was the first product that you started with?
We actually launched the company with 5 dog treats and 5 toys all at once.
Oh, wow. So you launched a whole collection, a brand from scratch. That's incredible.
Here's one of the toys, if you can see this toy.
Yeah.
Maybe
Well, I would
hold
say
that straight in front of you.
hold it. That was, from Jim's experience in launching new products and product lines with Target. They wouldn't be that interested in one product. They needed, is this a product or is this a business? So, we wanted to launch more than one product. And these are all toys and treats that work together to create an enriching experience for dogs. So it made sense to do all of that at the same time.
Yeah, that's great. I love this. Most people I talk to are, e-commerce entrepreneurs first and foremost. I'd say the most common advice, best practice is launch with one product, drive some success, then launch additional products. So it's super interesting to hear this different approach to it, build a brand from scratch. And it sounds like that was really guided by your insight in what retailers look for.
Yeah, on a merchandising shelf, it's hard to have one product sitting in the sea of other products. It's even hard to have five products sitting in a sea of other products. But what I've learned over the years, again, helping other brands, is it's very difficult to get any sort of attention with a one SKU wonder. It's like lightning in a bottle. So really creating the ecosystem of dog toys and dog treats that work together, and or treats or toys that could work independently in those respective categories within a retail on a retail shelf, that would be something that would be more ideal, more interesting for a retail merchant. We did, Henrik, we did have the idea. A lot of, as you know, a lot of entrepreneurs have an idea and they have a path. It's not linear. It's dynamic. And so we at one time early on were thinking about how do we build a DTC, a direct to consumer brand online, and learned very quickly that we didn't have the capital to support the acquisition cost with a new brand in a very competitive category.
Interesting, interesting.
So if you know anybody that can do that, we're all ears.
I think often you talk to e-commerce entrepreneurs, they're coming from the other angle that they don't have the resources or connections to get into retail, and therefore, feel like they have to launch a product first, build it up, launch multiple products, and then maybe you may be ready for retail at a later stage. So super interesting to see how you guys approach it from the other end. Both treats and toys. Can you tell me a little bit about the product development journey that you went through? So I assume you had to work with multiple suppliers then. I believe it's all made in the USA. Is that correct? Can you talk a little bit about that process? How did you figure out these were the products you're going to launch with, and how did you make them come to reality?
So again, wasn't linear. When I had the concept and idea, I had a few partners that I had known for many years in the pet space, manufacturing space of both toys and treats. I'll start with the toys first because I think it's a little more interesting. The toy category, making a dog toy in the US is not the simplest thing. I know we're all talking about bringing manufacturing back to the US. It's not like flipping a switch. It doesn't happen overnight. So finding trusted partners that understood substrates and product development and mold and designs and that sort of thing. When I told Melissa that this is something that I was interested in doing, and I have a really great partner to make our dog toys, we're going to make them in China. She said, "Oh, okay, that's awesome. But if I want you to be successful because you're taking some of our family money to do this, our personal money to and capital to do this. But if you want me to be involved, you got to figure a way to make this stuff in the US." And
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
took me about, I don't know, 10, 12 months to find a good partner who I had known for many years, but I just was suspicious about, can we manufacture a USA dog toy that would compete in the marketplace where most of the products in the dog toy space was Asia sourced or offshore sourced in India or Mexico or somewhere else. So that was kind of a journey we went on, and we did find the right partner to launch our brand in the toy space. And then the treat category is a really good friend of mine I've known for a couple dozen years, and also is a partner in the business. So he liked what we were doing. He has a dog treat manufacturing company, and wanted to be a part of what we were trying to build because it was kind of innovative and differentiated. I always joke, the world doesn't need another dog toy or another dog treat that is just a Me Too kind of product. It was something we'd really thought through and wanted to do something that was different. So this mission-driven, purpose-driven servicing, you know, providing a service to the planet was something that was differentiated than just sending, you know, a product into a retail store that was made in China that was, you know, $1.99.
That's great. And it looks like with those constraints, and maybe you would end up here anyway, but it seems all your toys are sort of one single piece of some plastic substrates for the most part. It's not a lot of different components or assembly required. Is that accurate?
That is mostly true. Yes, that is true. Yeah, it's not complicated. It's just injection molded.
Because I
So
found
there,
that, I think that that's what's hard to find in the US, right? The kind of China assembly factories that have a network of existing, you know, sub vendors that can pull things together. So,
But that
Jimmy, you were
makes
showing the
them,
product.
yeah,
So
that
that
was
makes them
this is.
100% recyclable as well.
Oh, 100% recyclable. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, they can send them back to us. This is our disc, and the backside of it has a lick man on the backside. So dog, it's a kind of a two-in-one product. It's really innovative. A water bowl, put food in it, treats. It's a soothing
Oh,
lick
that's
man.
great.
Right? So we've kind of trying to be a little more creative, more innovative around it. We do have a different product that is our this is our newest product. This is our Hive Zoomer product, which is actually patented design. It's a the best dog toy launcher in the marketplace, easiest accessible for folks that have arthritis or maybe has some disability. It's slobber-proof pickup for the ball or anything we put on it, and is super easy to launch it. Anybody can, a kid can, a 95-year-old person doesn't take a lot of effort or strength.
That's awesome. So can you talk a little bit about how you invented these products? How did you create them? So there's clearly a lot of creativity has gone into it. Did you guys bring that? Did you hire experts to help with the design and
Yeah, I think
educate?
we leveraged some of our manufacturing partners from, you know, just what's possible from an either injection molded or extruded product when it comes to our treats, and injection molded when it comes to our toys. And I would say that we design the products on paper and then worked with a third party kind of industrial design person that could actually commercialize the design that would work with a injection molded manufacturer. So I like to say that we didn't skin many of our knees doing this. We leveraged other companies that had been through this process, and kind of kept us out of the snake pits of making kind of drastic, costly mistakes. Not that we haven't made mistakes, but I think we eliminated probably 80%+ of those mistakes because we had good partners that shared experience, wisdom, and knowledge with us. Can you say something more, Lissy?
I think that's
Well, I
super
mean,
smart. Go ahead, Melissa. Sorry.
all of the designs are heavily influenced by the honeybee design. So, like hexagons and honeycombs, hives. So, Project Hive, pet company. So, it's sort of a gentle reminder to, you know, think about our mission and think about saving bees, think about, you know, doing good things for the planet, because well, the planet will be here, but it's really the health of humans and all species, really. So planting wildflower habitat is, you know, how we're helping nourish the planet, I would say.
Yeah, that's great. So the tell me that, so did you develop all these products in parallel, and then did you have a big launch date? Or I think you mentioned earlier maybe you already had an order that you were working towards. How did you go to market and how did you start selling?
Well, exactly as we planned it, let me tell you.
Yeah. That's wonderful.
We had a we had a we that no, wasn't true. We had a we sold the first, I would say the first opportunity that we went to a big pet retailer, and they committed to it on January 30th, 2020. They committed to a pretty meaningful launch. We didn't have any products manufactured. We didn't have any molds made, you know, made. It was really based on 3D models and some concepts and some presentation materials, which we we did a nice job of kind of sharing what we can do and the capabilities and our partners that we were doing it with, which were known by them. So on January 30th, 2020, we got the thumbs up verbal commitment. Yeah, we're doing this. We're going to launch this thing in 2021. Here are the dates. Here's what we think we're going to do. It was pretty meaningful. And then we started thinking about, okay, now we got to make this stuff, which we were
That's
transparent
amazing.
about. They knew we didn't have it made. So that was, we had enough lead time to manufacture it. However, we didn't calculate that COVID was going to happen roughly 60 days later. And then the world changed and shut down, and retailers really had to kind of batten the hatches of saying, okay, what are we really going to focus on? And they weren't really interested in trying a new innovative differentiated product. They were looking at how do they sell more milk bones, or how they sell more kind of core products that keep their shelves full because of the supply chain disruption that happened during that time frame. So we went ahead and started manufacturing molds and started the process, which frankly our model was, sell it and then build it, which I know is also a little unique to a lot of manufacturers or a lot of entrepreneurs. But we wanted to sell it before we built it. And then this it kind of flipped it on its head for us. So we actually started building it now that we weren't selling it to this one partner. And it was what got us into the business. So we actually launched the company in March of 2021 is when we launched the company. And we started just knocking on doors. We did ultimately get into the other pet retailer.
So did
There
you
was
start selling D2C then online
we
to
sold
begin?
on our website. We were selling DTC. We were also in launching at Chewy, which was is an online retailer, and Amazon. But we also were we went to the pet trade show and learned very quickly that instead of selling to big box retailer, which was my expertise from my previous experience, is that in the independent pet channel, the pet stores, the mom and pop neighborhood pet stores, those are distributed through, they get products through distributors, and it's a very different supply chain model than what we had anticipated or knew. So we learned very quickly of how to do that.
And the financials are different, I assume.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of I've read a lot lately about our customers, struggling with big retailers, that the terms are really tough, that if you sell to Costco and they don't sell your product, they can return it to you and you have to buy it back, basically. What have you found in the retail segment from an SMB's perspective? Have those distributor relationships worked out to the mom and pops, or do you think that the target of the world is the better way to go?
Yes and yes and no and no.
Yeah.
I mean, they're different. It's a different. I actually even throw in not only the independents but in the mass market, but also the online omni channel is also another model. I'll let Melissa answer that question if you have any thoughts about that.
Well, I think, I mean, there's upsides and downsides to both. I mean, the large retailers can be really tough to deal with. They're helpful in that they have bigger orders, and so that funds our inventory growth. And so then that allows us to, like launch a new product. So we will launch a new product with a large retailer, and then we'll be able to sell that new product to our distributor network. The distributor network typically takes another margin. It was not in our business plan to go through distributors because it's yet another middleman. So that is difficult. And then there's also, you're relying on additional salespeople through that channel that may or may not be selling your products to their stores. Other challenges, I think, with big box retailers are like we have toys and treats that work together. And so we would like them to be merchandised together. They have toy aisles separate from treat aisles. So they can't be merchandised together. If they only take two of our treats, then we've got two SKUs sitting there on the shelf. So merchandising can be a challenge. I think it's better for the smaller mom and pop stores. They may have a Made in USA, end cap that where they can merchandise all of our toys and treats and show how they work together. So I mean, that's better for our brand, but it's a smaller volume. So,
So going back a little bit, I believe you mentioned that you raised some money. Is that true? Is that and so when did that happen? Was that before or after you got the initial order? And have you
Yeah, so
continued to
that
raise
was.
money, or did you build it from there?
We did a friends and family round of financing that we did in all of 2020 and through mid 2021. So we've done one round, and it's just mostly people that we know and that trust us.
Yeah, that's awesome. Wow, I can go back to you thinking about your story. What, you have this perfect strategy. We're gonna sell it and build it. You execute it to perfection. You get a big order with a big retailer, and then COVID happens, right? That's business for you. It's just, I forget who it was who said it, but business is just problems. It's like that's all it is. Have problems and you solve problems. That's what
Yeah.
running a business is.
Yeah.
Well, listen, remember.
The dog industry grew tremendously under COVID
Yeah.
because people were home and bored, and more people were getting dogs, and so it was growing. But a lot of it is, in the food and the necessities piece, and not as much. So I think there was sort of an oversupply of everybody getting into it, and then it dropped off since then.
Yeah, at Gemba, we experienced the same thing after a couple of months where everybody panicked and nothing happened. E-commerce was starting to take off, and it seemed like people had unlimited budgets almost. I mean, we were growing, I think it was 5x in 19 and 3x in 2020 or something like that. I mean, it was like, and then for us, the downturn happened when the pandemic was over and e-commerce slowed down, and that was really. Suddenly went from having perfect product market fit to, maybe 50% lower conversion rates right after that. So,
Yeah.
but now it feels like it's stabilized. Is it the same for you? Did it grow through the pandemic and then slow down and now returned again, or?
We were growing through the pandemic just because we were a new company, so it wasn't like we were having like exponential multiples of like massive growth, but we were growing pretty massively from a percentage perspective during the pandemic and even thereafter. I think one of the things that has been interesting is that we're in this environment right now, this political environment about, today it's tariffs, right? So Chinese manufactured products or any products manufactured anywhere, one would think that USA manufactured company like ours would be able to benefit from it. And what we're finding is that along with USA manufactured, which is what everybody's looking for from a predictability and reliability of a supply chain, it still costs more to make stuff in the US. So when you have uncertainty in the marketplace, you have uncertainty in people's pocketbooks. We've seen this in the pet industry. We don't make dog food, but what's happening is a lot of pet owners are focusing more. If they have $50 to spend, they're spending it on dog food, not on dog treats or dog toys or even, ancillary products like leashes, collars, beds, or keeping things. So it is, it's a different challenge than we had during COVID, but it's still a challenge. And the pet industry is pretty competitive. What we find, and as an optimist, what we find is that our brand, when we find customers, going back to the DTC thing, which was our mission, when we find customers, they love us. They love our products. They love our mission. They love the fact we're making stuff in the US, and they love the fact that we're helping to create habitat. So as a small brand with limited funds, that's where our challenge is. We know we have a good product. We know we have, the Hive Zoomer, which I shared with you a second ago. This product is amazing. Every consumer that has tried it has loved it. It's just how do we get more access to those consumers to really share the story and share the brand? Because small brands are the deck stacked against small companies. It's a if you're a big company, a Nestle, a Mars, a Purina, the big companies are definitely able to leverage their size and scale and finances to stack it against small companies. And I see that in my other business. I see that with other small companies every day. It's hard. It's really hard.
Have you had any success with social? It seems like you have such a strong brand. It's, mission driven. It's deals with pets. It helps bees. It seems like the influencer side could potentially be a channel. I'm sure you've tried it, but have you had any success on that side?
It's difficult to if you measure conversion to sales on our website, it's a complete failure. So
All
we
right.
view the social as just kind of brand awareness, brand growth, because it doesn't really, we don't see it converting to sales. That doesn't mean it's not happening. They could go to Amazon or Chewy, they could go to their local retailer and buy it. So but yeah, getting traction on it is pretty difficult. We have tried influencers in the past, and it just seems like you're lighting money on fire.
Yeah, you got to be careful. All right. So how big is the team now? Is it just two of you, or I think you have some employees too, is that correct?
Yeah, we have one full-time employee. We have several subcontractors that do, a lot of the other work for us. But yeah, that's still a pretty small team.
And I hope you don't mind me asking, can you tell me a little bit about how it is to work with your spouse?
You're gonna get
You get a different answer.
I'd love to hear both.
Go ahead.
ahead.
You go
Well, I
first.
mean, people ask us how we do it, and a lot of it is our skills and our background are complementary. Like Jim is in the retail world and the relationships and new product design, manufacturing, pricing, all of that stuff. I'm in more financials, writing. I do all the writing for all of our products and all the sustainability stuff, like bringing the authenticity to it. Because it's not like we're just marketing sustainability stuff. I've been doing this for, almost 2 decades in a lot of other areas, not just in this space. So I think it's just sort of mutual respect in our areas of expertise helps a lot. I would say it's a challenge in that, we live in the same house. There's always work to be done. And so putting boundaries around, when we work, when we talk about work, that can be a challenge.
And I'll answer it really shortly, Henrik. The boundaries, I'm not really good with boundaries. Because I'm always thinking about business. I'm always thinking about what if we do this, or who, what if we talk to this person, or what, there's a lot. It's not linear. It's very dynamic. And I'm kind of like shiny object ch chasing the thing I hear last, which sometimes has been a benefit for me and sometimes is a detriment. So, I appreciate Melissa's discipline, and I've learned a lot from that, and I try my best to respect it.
That's great. Thanks for answering that. I've been surprised how many people have seen this. I don't know if you saw the show Landman, and there was an episode with Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, in it.
I've
And
seen the first couple episodes. I haven't seen that episode.
yeah, you can Google it and just see that segment. But Jerry Jones is not a person I necessarily look up to or would would look to for advice on how to live with life. But he says something really profound in that episode. He has a cameo and he talks about why he started the Cowboys. And it was really because he wanted to work with his family. He wanted to work with his kids, and he didn't want to live a life where he only saw them on Thanksgiving and Christmas, but instead create a life where they could be together all the time. And I've been surprised, as I said, to see how many entrepreneurs have seen that and are thinking about that, because I mean, it's true. And I think it's beautiful what you guys are doing, even though I'm sure it's frustrating sometimes. But the fact that you guys get to do it together is special and pretty awesome.
Well, interesting, because you said that I can't remember what a quote you how you said it, but business is just a set of problems that you have to solve. And when I'm frustrated, Melissa says exactly that way, what you just said, maybe in a different way, which has also helped me, because it's like, you think every day when there's problems every day. That's why it's hard. But there's ways to kind of either solve the problems or think about a different path. And then speaking about Jerry Jones, interesting you say that, because one of the interesting things that I think about as I was embarking on this idea that we'll start a pet company, We have two daughters, and one of the things that I wanted to show them is if you have an idea, you actually can go for it. And you may not succeed, but you will learn a lot. And I think there's a lesson in that of if you have an idea or have thoughts about what you want to do, like go for it. What's the worst thing that can happen? A few things can happen.
Lose
But I mean, I think
numbers.
it is what it's that entrepreneurial spirit, and I think people have different definitions of what entrepreneurialism is, and I think it's really whatever you want it to be. And I'm really proud of what we've been able to accomplish. We've created, as Lucy said, 30 plus million square feet of bee pollinator habitat in a few years, and we're
That's
making
amazing.
an impact, and we're still on the path, and we have great product, and we have really great customers, and we're just. Yeah, I think we still have room to make this thing work.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. I try to do the same with my kids. I have a boy and a girl, college age, and we talked last summer about what jobs are going to be around 5 years from now,
Right.
and it's not a question that's easy to answer. Nobody knows, but I do believe that entrepreneurship is going to be around, right? And I think what you're doing, what I try to do with my kids, to show them, maybe they don't want to join your pet company or my company, but at least to show them that it's possible. You
Yeah.
can envision something and bring it into existence. And I think that that's a beautiful thing to teach them.
Yeah, and I'll leave one more comment about that is both Lissy's grandparents, great grandparents in her case, and my grandfather started businesses, at the turn of the century and or the turn of the century, and it kind of is in, provided really great family opportunities. So, good stuff.
Awesome. I could talk to you guys forever, but I'm sure you have better things to do. So to wrap up, one piece of advice you want to share with our listeners that you've learned along the journey, and then also if there's how can they find you, where to go if they want to learn more or buy your products.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
You want to give some advice, Lissy?
I mean, approaching business is, a set of problems, and I think overall having a good attitude and taking initiative are the two biggest things, attitude and initiative, and that is in every type of job. So just keep a good attitude, and take initiative for when you think you have an idea.
Yeah. I'll add attitude to the initiative piece of it for her. I'm not attitude, anticipation. The thing I will throw out there is kind of what we've been talking about a little bit recently is that, if you have an idea or concept or a thought, go for it. And you don't have to do it alone. There are lots of people that want to help. So use your network, use people, not use them, but use the networks of people to help you because everybody wants to help other people. And if they don't want to help you, you don't want to work on them. So it's okay. But I think that's my advice is go for it and use your resources. There are ways to, it's hard and there's ways to make it a bit easier if you have the right people. People are what makes it work. So
I mean,
we're blessed with a really terrific. Our one employee is amazing. She's terrific and great attitude, all the things you talk about, and she's been really amazing for our company. And we're just lucky we got her on our team.
yeah, I would like to add a little bit about sort of having a mission. Jim talked about how I had said if you make stuff in China, go ahead, but I'm not interested in being a part of it. A lot of what we were doing starting a business was making a business that we are proud of, like trying to make the decisions where we understand the impact long term. It's not just about profitability, quarterly earnings, things like that. And thinking about, do I have a bigger mission here where we can have an impact to make the world a better place? So I know that sounds a little bit cheesy, but just as a sustainability consultant, that's sort of like, do you have a bigger goal rather than just selling widgets?
Yeah. No, I don't think that's, I think that's great. I think it's wonderful. I think, a lot of people wake up in the morning and You ask yourself, what am I going to do today? Why am I doing it? If it's just to earn a paycheck, I think it's then you have a long way to Friday, right? And to have something that motivates you, that excites you, that, like you said, you can be proud of, that you're having a positive impact in the world, I think that's super important.
So yes, where can people find our products? So you can find our products on Chewy. You can find our products on Amazon. You can find our products in a bunch of retailers, independent retailers around the country. And I would say it'd be helpful for us if you went to your re local retailer and said you wanted to buy our products in your store, in their stores. Just I'm a sales guy, so I'm selling now. I think it's the best way for people to find out our brand, to have a pet owner, a pet store owner, to say, hey, where can I get this? We have distribution networks set up in North America, Canada, and the U.S. That services most every retail independent store in North America. And then you can go to our website, so projecthivepetcompany.com. And lucky you for listening today, because we'll give you a 15% discount if you order from our website. If you punch in code SAVE, SAVE 15 now, save 15 now, that'll get you 15 off. And that's good. Share it with your friends, share it with your relatives, share it with your pups.
I'm going to go buy some stuff right now.
Awesome.
Well,
Awesome.
listen, Jim, thank you so much for taking time and sharing candidly open with me. You've built a wonderful company, you should be proud of. Thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to share our story with you and your audience.
Thank you. All righty, this is Henrik Johansson again. Thank you so much for listening to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. If you are a successful product entrepreneur, or you work in a company that creates new products, and you have an interesting story about how you developed your product and brought it to market, and you would like to be on this podcast, please go to Gemba.com and click on podcast, and you can fill out an application to be on the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. If you liked this podcast, you enjoyed this interview, and we would greatly appreciate if you would share it on social media. You can just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on socials. If you know anyone that you think would be a great guest, please tag them on social media and let them know about the show, and include the hashtag Innovator Insights. And would love to see your post and any suggestions you have to guests. That's how we find most of our guests, from suggestion from other listeners. We're regularly putting out new episodes and new content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a ton to me and the team. We really appreciate it. Do you want to know more about Gemba, me, or the podcast? Please go to Gemba.com and click on podcast, or you can follow me on LinkedIn. That's where I do most of my posts. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Have a great day.